Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. If you have football questions for the professor, text them in. 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Hello, John.
Boy, that was a short vacation.
Yeah, just one day.
Oh,
just
okay.
Yeah, I got more.
That's one day more than I've taken.
Well, look at you. Yeah. You're a maniac, Jim.
Yeah.
Maniac.
Are you? Hey, Bob. As long as we've known each other, are you surprised?
No, I'm not. This is just who you are, and we expect you to be here every day, John. So, you're going to have to take a vacation at some point. I'll have to take more days. Everybody will be okay. It's going to be good. By the way, how did Dave do? He did a nice job,
yeah,
didn't he?
He did
driving the show.
Yeah.
He kept Jim in order, kept Shannon in order. Good job by him.
Bob, you want to read the text that the one texter said about what it was like with me running the show?
Nah, I wasn't going to bring that out there. Wasn't nice.
What did he say?
It was something like teaching my 15-year-old how to drive a stick shift.
Ooh.
Car.
Oh,
I wasn't going to bring that up. That was not nice. We'll save that for mean text. But John, you were talking about Bruce Irvin today and how he'll be different in his second go around with the Seahawks. For those that didn't hear what you were talking about, how do you mean? What do you mean by him being different?
Well, what's going to be different is that, you know, he came here and he had to learn to be a linebacker, learn how to drop into coverage, learn everything. And fortunately, you know, he came at such a good time because, you know, he came, you know, when Bobby Wagner was just starting. I mean, you have, KJ Wright was in his second year. And then the big thing was you had Ken Norton Jr. developing all three of them all at the same time and, you know, treating him, not only treating him like, they're sons, but not on the field and off the field. Because I know one thing that Ken Norton Jr. said, and this comes from even the players, is that, you know, not only did he teach them good football, but he taught them good life. Like, for example, he got them all three to, and all the linebackers, to exchange books, read more. And I'm not talking football books, you know, educational books, everything like that, and really kind of grew them as players and persons. And so, you know, he came in, and of course, you remember that was the F class that was drafted because, I mean, you had such, you know, bad guys like Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson and Bruce Irvin, and Bruce, of course, being the most criticized first rounder that year, and he turned out to be great. I mean, you know, he had good speed, he picked up everything, but now his role is going to be a little bit more defined, and what's going to be interesting to see how much strong side linebacker he's going to play, because I still presume he and KJ Wright are going to share the position. And how they'll handle it is that you may see Bruce on first down sometimes, and you may see KJ on first down sometimes. But then when they go into nickel and go into the pass defense, then you'll have Bruce Irvin with his hand on the ground from the Leo position. You know, because remember, what's amazing when you think about this, Bruce Irvin has 52 sacks. And I don't know if he's had a year where he's had less than 6 sacks in a season. And so, you know, he's done things from outside linebacker. He's done things from defensive end. And, you know, he's been more linebacker than he has been defensive end. But I think it's a great combination because now he can come in here. And then, you know, if necessary, you know, KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner can be the linebackers when they go nickel, if they go nickel as much as I think they will. So it's kind of interesting to see. But, Bruce is, I think, going to be a valuable part of this team.
Yeah, I remember, you know, you mentioned the nickel there. Remember, KJ got 3 interceptions last year, so he did a really good job in coverage. You know, the funny thing about him, though, John, is that he doesn't seem to want to play linebacker. Every time that, and I'm sure he'll do whatever they ask him to do, but every time we talk to him about that, he's like, hey, I just want the sacks, man. This is a guy that had 2 pick sixes in a single season. I mean, a lot of linebackers, like yours truly, don't ever get one of those, so... Anyway, I always think that's funny, but he also gives you a lot of roster flexibility, right?
Yes.
If you know you can keep him as both, you know, as 2 positions, I mean, that's going to allow them to maybe keep an extra receiver or an offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm. No, And particularly, too, that, you know, because you would think normally they would keep 10 defensive linemen. Well, you can actually have him as the 10th defensive lineman because, you know, he's probably going to have more plays with his hands on the ground than he is at linebacker. Because, again, I just think that that's going to be a shared position and they'll come up with different packages. But also what you like about it is that, you know, they don't have to have Bruce on the field 65 plays a game. You know, you still have three other Leos that can come in there and rotate. And that keeps guys fresh, which I think is going to be, you know, good because, you know, you've got, you know, KJ, you know, probably should not be a 65 you know, down player and play out there for 65 plays every game. And he is older. Same thing with Bruce. And so you just kind of, you know, mix and match. But I think it's a good mix and match.
Hey, John, I heard Ben Volen from the Boston Globe on your show this morning. And you interviewed him. And he was talking about Bill Belichick believing in his defense, building it from the back to the front. And we always, you know, think, well, gee, you got to be strong in the trenches. But I'm just wondering, do you think the same thing is going on here in Seattle? I know they added Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayo, and they're probably going to get a defensive tackle still in free agency. But, you know, they added Diggs last year on the back end, and then they added Dunbar this year. And I'm thinking, man, that secondary's improved enough that it should help the guys up front, too.
Are you reading my mind? Because it was funny, because honestly, I was going to morph into that right toward the end, but I didn't want to go too long. And that's exactly what I was going to be talking about. So we're actually thinking on the same page. And yes, I do think that you know, Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick have the same mindset. I mean, think about because what Ben Volen said, and it just kind of registered in my mind. It's like, that's what Pete did. Because, you know, Pete, you look at the defense, and, you know, he built the defense from the Legion of Boom. And Pete, being a former defensive back coach, you know, like to have the man coverage and get the best coverage they can, you know, the cover one, the cover three. You know, he's worked both because he's learned so much from, you know, some of the good cover two coaches in the league. But, of course, you know, he likes the man coverage. And one of the things that Bill has done, and he started doing it about 3 or 4 years ago, is that he makes the move starting with Stephon Gilmore, who gave them great man-to-man coverage. And if you look at the three cornerbacks that he has out there, that's the best man group in the league. And they use more man coverage than any team in football last year. And so I think they both go from the same vein. And then you look at this team, Seattle, and you can see there's going to be a lot more man coverage this year, which will make this defense better. I know that Pro Football Focus was doing a little bit of a look, and they said that, you know, in the limited number of plays on man, you know, this team was like pretty good. Their numbers were real good, but in zone they struggled a little bit, and so much of that's because of the pass rush and trying to keep everybody in front of you and all those different things. But no, I think in a lot of ways that's why I think this team is better than outsiders think, because you look at the cornerback position. I know that Doug Farrar, for example, He did his rating on who's the best man guys in football, and, you know, he had Dunbar up there, he had Trey Flowers up there, and Shaquille Griffin, of course, has been to the Pro Bowl, and he had good ratings on him. And so I think that you know, this team is now kind of rebuilt in what Bill Belichick's doing in New England.
Hey, John, I know you guys probably touched on this yesterday, but I didn't get a chance to talk to you.
You were on vacation.
Yeah, it was a long one. It was a good one. But it was the big news over the weekend, obviously, is Cam Newton signing with the New England Patriots. And then I don't know how deep you got into what Richard Sherman had to say about that, but his tweet was, how many former league MVPs have had to sign for the minimum asking for a friend? Just ridiculous, a transcendent talent. And less talented quarterbacks getting $15 to $16 million a year, disgusting. Now, I'm not sure what he's implying other than just a disparity in pay, or if he's just saying it's a racial thing. I don't know what he's trying to say there. What did you make of Richard's comments about Cam Newton's deal?
I mean, you can understand it because, I mean, you know, Richard, you know, wrongfully took a lot of criticism for the deal that he did, and he was one of the players that started to, you know, branch out and not have an agent and did it on his own. And you know, he got criticized, you know, for the deal that he did, and he ends up getting a big $4 million bonus. And so it's like, okay, he came out of a fine. But of course, I think what you're looking at is that you know, he's looking at a starting quarterback who, I guess, and I know he respects Cam Newton, you know, having to sign for a little under $1.2 million. Jameis Winston signing for about $1.2 million, and here here you have guys like Nick Foles making $8 million, Marcus Mariota making $8.8 million. You know, it just didn't seem to jive. And, you know, he's also, I'm sure, speaking from the player and being a board member on the Players Association. And it's like, you know, when you have deals like that, it pulls down the value of things. But on the flip side, what I look at is like, okay, now wait a second. This isn't a normal year. I mean, you know, if, you know, Cam had a choice, he could wait until late July to see if he can at least get a physical with somebody and go ahead and sign a deal. But it's like he felt more it was important to line himself up for the chance to start, and then he can worry about the money later. You know, because remember, even though this is an agreement, it's not one that's locked solid, because we've seen five of these happen where you get an agreement, you come in, you fail the physical, or the team elects to fail you in the physical. And so if that happens to Cam, it could actually work out somewhat better, because then he's going to be able to get physicals at the start of camp and then go ahead and go sign with somebody else. But I think that, you know, he picked the Patriots because it's like, well, wait a second here. I have a choice. I can wait a month and have no idea what's going to happen, or I can take this deal now for little money and then, you know, try to get my starting job back.
All right, John, kind of a goofy question here, but 360 wants to know, if you actually did take a vacation, where would you go?
I would go down to Santa Monica.
Didn't you go there last time? Didn't you go to LA?
Four years ago, yeah. It's, I mean, you know,
Four years ago, yeah.
Well, but see, you know, as you know, with my wife in a wheelchair, and it's just hard to be able to go and make a trip like that, because, you know, I need a hospital bed, I need a lift and a caretaker to be able to a caregiver to be able to take care of her. So it's like, you know, that's why it's tough to go on any kind of vacation. So I just haven't gone in the last 4 years, and I guess I haven't even taken a day off. I know we get Thursday and Friday off, but I know I'm hosting on the network on Friday, and, you know, I got a Washington Post story to do, a 710 story to do. So it's like, yeah, no time off.
Well, you're a good man, the way that you take care of your wife, John. I admire you for that. 425 wants to know, the Falcons, did they get a steal with Todd Gurley? I know that Matt Ryan was really talking him up, and I think they've had some workouts together. Do you think maybe he's going to make a comeback this season?
I mean, you can see that they're going to try to do a lot of things with him. I'm not sold, because I just worry about how many carries can he really have. Because, you know, he's got a ticking time bomb of a knee, you know, an arthritic knee. And you've seen in the last 2 years, particularly at the end of the Super Bowl year and all last year, he was limited. And so I'm a little suspect on that. That's why it was kind of a curious move. I know that, you know, Dirk Cutter wants to use a little bit more of the Rams offense and the 49ers offense. And, of course, Gurley is, you know, very big into that. But I just wonder, how many carries can he legitimately have before wearing down?
Professor, the 206 wants to know if Tyler Lockett will have a Pro Bowl season this year.
I think so. I don't know if he's going to make the Pro Bowl, because there's so many good receivers, you know, particularly in the NFC. But, you know, for the last, I think he's going to catch more than 80 passes like he did last year. I think he's going to get over 1,000 yards. And, you know, he's now recognized as a Pro Bowl caliber player, being a Pro Bowl alternate the last couple of years. And when the NFL Network did their top 100, the players voted him into the top 100. So I think he can. What I just worry about is I don't know if he's going to get enough votes, because, you know, you look at Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, some of those guys, they're going to end up getting more catches than him. And so I don't see him getting the 100-catch season. And so that may be the thing that will keep him out of the Pro Bowl.
Do you think it will be this year, next year, or the year after that, when DK Metcalf becomes the number one receiver, or that it will never happen?
I think right now, as long as Lockett here, I think he's number one. But it's a great situation, because, you know, if Metcalf develops like we've seen, then all of a sudden you start to look down to Tampa Bay with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and say, wait a second, this is now one of the best 1-2 combinations in football. You know, because I look at the Tampa Bay wide receiving core, particularly those two, as the best duo in football. But if Metcalf continues to improve like he started off last year, then, you know, all of a sudden you've got this group here competing against Tampa Bay.
Hey, speaking of Tampa Bay, I actually heard Wilbon and Kornheiser debating who now, with Cam Newton going to the Patriots, who has a more successful season. Tampa Bay plays in a tougher division as compared to the Patriots, but what would you say now with the new addition to the Patriots, who comes up with a better year?
I think that I really like what I see out of Buffalo, but and I still look at all the changes that are there. But I think we have to acknowledge it. It's going to be a good defense for the Patriots. I mean, they only gave up 14.1 points a game last year, and they have a lot of young quarterbacks, and now they have to play against. And so you can look at Cam Newton going against the young quarterbacks and having an advantage if he wins the starting job. So I know that Ben Volen believes that the Patriots now with Cam are better than the Bills, but I think it's a pretty good race. And you look at what's going on in Tampa. I mean, I think they're a wild card team because New Orleans is so good. But the competition is so much tougher for Tom Brady because he goes against, there's 11 quarterbacks other than Tom in the NFC making $21 million a year. And the only one of those 12 who hasn't been to a Pro Bowl is Jimmy Garoppolo, who ended up going to a Super Bowl.
Hey, John, 360 wants totals for all NFC West, but instead of doing that, how about the win-loss totals? What's realistic for Arizona? I think all three of us have felt like they might climb up, mm-hmm. possibly ahead of the Rams in the division. But you think they can go 9-7?
I think they can. Yeah, I think they're between 7 and 9 right now. And of course, I said that last year because I said the 49ers are going to be the most improved team in football, and they end up going to the Super Bowl with 13 wins. The defense for Arizona is not close to San Francisco's defense of last year. And so, it's better. I mean, they've added two linebackers, a defensive lineman. They'll get Robert Alford back after missing the season with an injury. So I think they'll be more formidable on defense, and there's going to be a great improvement. And where you're going to see the big jump is if you're talking today, you would have Kyler Murray as the fourth best quarterback in this division. By the end of the season, you're going to make the argument, I'll make the argument, Kyler Murray is going to be the second best quarterback in the division, because I think he's going to grow that much, and it certainly helps when you have a guy like Hopkins and Fitzgerald.
Hey, John, you talked to, is it Pro Football Network's Tony Pauline, the chief draft analyst? You talked to him today, and he's the Jadeveon Clowney whisperer, isn't he? Mm-hmm. I mean, did he give you any new developments? I saw Josina Anderson talk to Clowney today, but it just still seems like things are the same as they were yesterday and the day before.
Yeah, because again, what he was saying is that from what he's hearing, the main choices that are there for Clowney is the teams that he wants, and you can understand this, is New Orleans, and he also had the Dallas Cowboys. But here's where the problem is. It's not going to work. And the reason, because of the cap. Because when you look at the Saints, I mean, they've got $9 million of cap room and, 4.9 in the rookie pool that they still have to spend. So that's not going to work. And then on top of it, they've got 12 guys next year in what might be a year where the cap's going to go down, making $10 million a year plus on the cap. And, it's a mess. I mean, really next year, they have all that class of 2017 coming through, with Marcus Lattimore. You have to pay him and Alvin Kamara. I mean, they are just loaded and having a hard time to do it. Marcus Williams. And then you look at Dallas. I mean, Dallas, they're going to be doomed cap-wise by the 15th of July if they can't get Dak Prescott done, because Prescott right now is making 31.4 as far as in the franchise tag. But if they don't get him done, they're going to keep him at 37.7, and they already have 7 players on next year's cap that are eating up 96.6 million dollars of cap room. And if you add 37.7 of Dak Prescott, that's 133 million on what might be a 198 cap. It just doesn't work. And again, you can say, okay, you can create some room by taking some contracts. No, they're going to have to start cutting players, so it doesn't work in those two teams. And as Josina was saying, is that he's still open to anything, but the interesting thing, he said that, I want to get something done before the start of the season. He didn't say the start of training camp.
Mm. Well, they need to fall in line with a lot of veterans who don't love training camp and do anything to skip that. So we'll see what he does. John, good stuff. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Pro Football Network's Tony Pauline joined John Clayton, who we just spoke to. They discussed the latest reports on Jadeveon Clowney. We'll get deeper into that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, we'll tell you why Adrian Peterson, or we'll let him tell you, why he feels disrespected. That's coming up in less than 15 minutes. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We brought this up with John Clayton, Pro Football Network's Tony Pauline was a guest with Clayton, and they talked about a few different things pertaining to Jadeveon Clowney and his ideal landing spots. He's brought up the Saints and the Cowboys by all reports. Cut number 7, Tony talks about Dallas and New Orleans being at the top of the list, but that he's still open to other teams.
I think with Clowney, those are his preferences, but his options seem to be closing for a couple of reasons. I mean, he didn't have many suitors for the big contract he wanted when free agency opened, and then you had the whole COVID-19 situation, which I think made the situation even worse for him. So I don't think my report was those are the teams that he prefers to play mm-hmm. for. He's not limiting himself to those teams, but that's the preference where he would be.
And then one more from Tony talking about Clowney, basically implying he would sign a deal immediately. It's not him that's dragging his feet. It's just that the teams that have potential interest have no sense of urgency right now.
You know, Clowney wants to sign yesterday, but the teams are not in any sort of rush because the teams are still kind of figuring this stuff out. You got guys like, you know, Yannick Ngakoue from Jacksonville, who has been demanding a trade since when? March. Mm-hmm. And he can't be moved. So I think it's a situation where it's going to be ever-changing for Clowney because he can't get what he wants. And really, from the owner's position, I think there's no rush to do any of this for Clowney, for Yannick, or even to trade Jamal Adams here in New York with the Jets.
So it's interesting to hear him say he'd sign yesterday, and it's the teams. Well, that sort of flies in the face of the reports, or maybe it's just the teams that haven't made the offer. But we've heard about the Seahawks making an offer, the Browns making an offer. He didn't agree to any of those, so maybe now his urgency has kicked up a bit. He would sign a deal immediately, and those deals aren't being offered yet. I'm not sure what's happening behind the scenes. But what do you make of what Tony had to say there, saying, yeah, he'd like to go to New Orleans, like to go to Dallas, but he's still open to other teams out there, which I would assume include the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, and going back to the first clip, I mean, those teams don't have the kind of cap space either. And so, and for the Seahawks, you know, they're going to have to create some because, as we know, they like to keep cash on hand. And so, yeah, it's interesting. One thing, though, real quick, we have another person that can't say Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah. So, I hope
that John
names.
Doesn't go back. John's going to revert back to Yannick Ngakoue or whatever. But, yeah, I forgot all about him, and, you know, he's just stuck there. So for a lot of these guys that would normally get, you know, some late, you know, off-season maneuvering by teams, I feel like that's kind of going to dry up because of the uncertainty of the salary cap going forward and just really stuck in a bad situation there. And I think it was kind of interesting. I was listening to John today talk to Tony Pauline, and he said, you know, the thing about that he thinks it's Clowney, not his agent. And he described him as a different cat, which, you know, just he thinks differently than other people, which I typically like guys that are like that are different cats. And so it'll be really interesting. I can't imagine that at this point in his career he would, you know, settle and just – I mean, he probably wants to play no matter what, but it's starting to look like he may end up on a team that's not in contention to go to the playoffs, and that was his main goal in the very beginning.
Yeah, you know, I'm wondering if there's – when free agency started, I thought, boy, there's going to be a big bidding war for Jadeveon Clowney, and then that didn't materialize, and I'm wondering if there's going to be a bidding war – just before training camp starts, or maybe during training camp before the season starts, but a different kind of bidding war where the numbers aren't $20 million or $18 million. We're talking $8 million or $10 million maybe, or maybe even less than that. When you look at what Cam Newton got, and teams are pretty well set, I would imagine every team out there would like to add Clowney to their roster. But, you know, the part of it, are you still hoping that the Seahawks will be in that bidding war? I suppose most people are. But I thought Stacey Ross made a good point today about if you're Clowney, Yeah, okay, you'd probably like to come back to the Seahawks because they're a contending team. You like the coaches. You like the teammates here. You mentioned Brandon Jackson, other guys, Jaron Reed. He liked playing here. So there's that that you have going for you. But she mentioned, and this is a good point, would you want to go somewhere else where you could get higher numbers? I mean, he had 3 sacks or 3.5 sacks last year here. Would he want to go somewhere else and thinking maybe team first, but also individual second? And maybe if I go to this team, I could get 8 or 9 sacks, maybe even 10, and get a bigger payday next year. And in Seattle, I saw how it worked out. And maybe it would be different for him playing with Mayoa and Irvin, and maybe he'd get in the 8 to 9 sack range here. But he might be exploring other opportunities rather than Seattle.
Maybe he is, and it feels like the big bidding wars for him and other players maybe just gets pushed back a year, that these guys are playing on one-year deals. You brought up Cam Newton. You saw your guy Jameis Winston. I mean, you've got other guys who have signed these one-year sort of prove-it deals. Let me get in there. Let me show what I can do. And, you know, the bidding war we anticipated would be this year will now be pushed back one season, and I'm going to prove myself in this one-year contract situation that I find myself in. And Clowney looks like he'll be part of that group as well. So maybe, you know, the anticipation we had going into this offseason just gets bumped back a year. And Clowney, whether it's with Seattle or whether it's Cleveland, Dallas, New Orleans, wherever he ends up, maybe he does put up numbers, and then maybe it's next season that we're talking about the true bidding war for his services, and maybe the same is true for Cam Newton, maybe Jameis Winston in a miracle situation. People really want him. I'm not sure. But, you know, a lot of these guys that anticipated big paydays didn't get him. He's not alone in this. So I just think the circumstances are so unique with the virus and now the salary cap potentially going down and the loss of all of this revenue. Nobody really knows how it's going to get worked out, but it just feels like, all right, we got a group that are going to be in that area of being bid upon by a bunch of different teams, but that just gets pushed back.
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, he's not – the thing is with, it gets pushed back a year. I don't think it's worse for any other kind of athlete than a football player because – and he's only 27. But, I mean, man, the age just catches up to you. And you don't really realize it. Like, you know, I thought, oh, yeah, I'll easily come back and play for a 10th year. And no, man, it was I couldn't get a job anywhere. And that's the unfortunate part for him is that that's happening. The other thing I can't help but think is I hate regret. I don't know about you guys. I sometimes grind over it, and I should just let things go. But, like, things in my past that I did, mistakes that I make, I sometimes will grind over them, and it's not the thing to do, by the way, but I worry about, like, what kind of regret he's feeling, because I'm sure that the Seahawks offered him something that was more than he's going to get,
that he would take right now probably.
Absolutely, yeah. So I mean, and I feel like that even that ship has sailed. But to be back on this team, which we all know he loved, and they loved him. They loved him that he worked through the injury that he had. And now, you know, with Brock, we're hearing about a knee. And, man, if he could have just, you know, gone back in his time machine, and I'm sure, he would have jumped all over it. And it makes me feel kind of bad for him because he is such a fantastic player. And if he's not in the league next year, I'll be bummed. I like watching him play. He's one of those guys, like Lamar Jackson. I mean, I just can't get enough of watching Lamar Jackson play. And, you know, Clowney's that same type of player. You just can't wait to see him. And we'll see. Hopefully it's not some, like, ridiculously embarrassing, you know, amount of money. But what if it has to be like a minimum with some incentives or something like that? I feel like he's not ever going to earn back the money that he could have gotten right away when the season ended.
I like hearing the compassionate side of Dave Wyman. I get a kick out of it, though, Dave, because I've heard you say that a few times, and I'm busting your chops here, so bear with me. But I don't feel bad for Clowney. I mean, he's made millions upon millions of dollars. There's a lot of other people I feel worse for than Clowney. I understand where you're coming from. I mean, the guy
but
comes
it's all
out,
relative, right?
Yeah, the guy comes out thinking, man, I'm going to hit my big payday here after playing in Seattle for 1 year. I'm going to get $20 million offers left and right, and then man, I'm not even getting 15. I'm not even getting 12. And then his agent says, man, you're going to be lucky to get 10. So I see where you're coming from on that one. But I mean, he's still going to end up getting a pretty good payday. And then if he has a good year, then I think he's still young enough that he might get what he was looking for this year, next year.
He left $6 million on the table at least. $6 million. I feel bad for him, but you're right. In the grand scheme of things, with what's going on in the country, yeah, he'll be okay.
He's going to survive. Hey, remember, you guys do have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and it becomes a radio right there. As we said, Adrian Peterson feels disrespected. We'll hear more about why when we sweep the dial, coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
The NFLPA also mentioned a significant bit of news, something that confirming something that we had reported previously, that they expect roughly $3.5 billion in potential revenue losses, something that will affect not this salary cap, but future salary caps, and it's something that the NFL and the NFLPA will have to get together and figure out so the 2021 cap doesn't take a hit.
Yeah, we've been hearing about this for quite some time. I mean, it's going to be a big, big financial blow to the league, even if they do go on as scheduled with no fans or some fans. We still have no idea how that's going to work. We've heard about selling advertising in some of the front rows. They're going to find different ways. I expect that the NFL will get very creative in finding different revenue streams, even without a full stadium, that they're going to find an avenue to bring in some revenue that they otherwise would have lost.
All right, so yeah, I'll go with you, Bob, and do the silver lining thing. And my word was going to be innovation. You know, maybe they're going to have to be innovative and try to replace that in some other way, and maybe some good will come out of that. How about that? That's reaching a little bit. But, when we had Andrew Brandt on, I listened to him talk. He said Major League Baseball was going to lose 40% of their revenue because of lack of fans in the stands, and for football it was half. It was 20%. But yeah, I mean, I think that they will find a way, hopefully, to make that up. But again, it's probably going to, be a big deal as far as the salary cap goes. And for guys like Shaquille Griffin, Jim, it's unfortunate. Poor Shaquille Griffin might only get like $13 million. I need to qualify this before I say every time I feel sorry for the NFL players. But, a lot of times you only get one shot, you know what I mean? And, to make the big money. But that's just, Jim, it's all relative. So if I say that going forward, let's just invoke that little nugget there.
Yeah, it's not like you're starting a GoFundMe page for him or anything.
No, I know. Well, I'll say this about Shaquille Griffin.
No, that's a very good point. Very good point.
If he goes another season, 16 games without an interception, his streak will go to 47 games without an interception, and I don't think he'd be looking at double-digit millions from anybody. So maybe Dunbar will get that on the other side. But, no, I'll go silver lining, too. It's rare for me to do that. But aren't they talking about lining the bottom of the field with a tarp and putting advertising down there, or was that MLB? I'm getting them confused sometimes. But the NFL can go ahead and do that, too, and just make them like NASCAR drivers or golfers and go ahead and give them a bunch of ads on their uniforms.
Yeah.
Put it on the helmets, too. Who cares, But that's another way of getting some revenue, and wouldn't bother me. I think the Storm, correct me if I'm wrong, and I should know this since I live here in Seattle, but don't they have Bing on the front of their uniforms? So why don't we see more of that?
Listen, the contract is not fair. But the NFL is not a fair world. Life is not fair. So, to Richard Sherman's point, it's not a fair contract, but I understand why it is the way that it is. And Matt, you're 100% correct. The contract is what it is because he didn't play football last year. It's because he plays quarterback and he's had two surgeries on his shoulder in the last 2 years. He's coming off three surgeries in the last two seasons. I mean, that's the number one. We all know that. Like, that's why I'm a little bit confused by this. We don't know what his health is. Dan Graziano said this morning, if he's not healthy, he could see him not even being on the roster. And so there is still that question that is unanswered of what his health is. We can't really use the Jameis Winston contract as a conversation piece because Jameis has come out and said he took less money to go to New Orleans.
Yeah, and Jameis also was a guy who was not an MVP, also a guy who threw 30 interceptions last year. So, yeah, there's a reason he didn't get, you know, a massive offer and people breaking down his door. But in regards to Sherman, I'm still not entirely sure what he was trying to get to or if it was just as he wrote it. Like, well, this just seems ridiculous that a former MVP didn't get a bigger offer. And, you know, has anybody else, how many former MVPs have had to sign for the minimum? I like that Kurt Warner responded raising his hand emoji because he signed for that backing up Matt Leinart in Arizona, and he was a former MVP. So, I think if this were a normal year where Cam Newton could have flown around from team to team and they could have checked him out physically, maybe we're having a completely different conversation, but that wasn't the case for him. And Clowney, as we've talked about, he's not in a unique situation. So I don't think there was anything nefarious going on behind the scenes or collusion. Don't sign Cam Newton. I just don't feel like there was anything untoward happening here. I think there are a lot of concerns about, is he too beat up? Can he play anywhere near what he used to play? And are we willing to risk it without taking a look at the guy?
Yeah. Well, I said this yesterday. I don't know if this resonates with other people, the phrase shouting at the wind. Sherman does a lot of that. I don't really understand what he's mad at. He's mad at business. He's mad at the free market. I don't understand. He does a fair amount of that where he sounds kind of illogical in, but look, we're talking about it. So maybe that was his aim.
I guess. Yeah. I agree with Richard Sherman though. I mean, you look at a guy like Cam Newton, everything that he's done, you'd think he'd be making at least $10 million, if not 15, maybe even 20, but the opportunities weren't out there for him. I'm surprised that he didn't pursue, or maybe the Jaguars didn't pursue him. As much as I love Minshew, I think you look at Cam Newton as being a viable candidate there. But so maybe he'll get his big payday next year, just like Clowney. But again, we're talking about a salary cap going down. And I'm excited to see how it's all going to play out. Forget about the contract part of it. I just love the fact that Cam Newton's going to be with Bill Belichick and they're coming to Seattle on Sunday Night Football during the second week of the season. It should be fun to watch.
You know, I still haven't been able to answer that question, man. You know, it's disrespectful to be honest with you. It really is, you know, but I think a change is going to come. I think this young core of guys and, you know, me and Frank Gore, we continue to show guys that, hey, you know, we are valuable. You know, we can have, you know, 10, 14-year career as well. So, you know, value us as well like you would value a quarterback, you know. And like I say, these young core of backs are really, you know, changing the game for the better. You know, you look at McCaffrey and all he's able to do. And so you, I feel like you're going to continue to get guys like that. That's going to help raise the value of, you know, of their running back position.
The voice of Adrian Peterson lamenting the devaluing of the running back. And I get why he feels that way, but he and Frank Gore are truly exceptions. I mean, you just look at the history and the lengths of careers at that spot. You can't compare it to a quarterback, unfortunately. And I'm not, they do have value, certainly, but it's in a much shorter window, way more often than not. Those are the outliers. I get it. It's not fair. And if I'm a running back, I'm feeling disrespected too. But looking at it from the outside, if you're, Dave, as you say, it's a business and you're looking at where am I going to invest this amount of money I've been allowed to spend. I understand the approach to the running back. They do have a tremendous amount of value. But it feels like more often than not, it's for a much, much shorter amount of time than a quarterback.
Yeah, I just don't think the term disrespected belongs in this situation. You know, it's economics. With that said, though, I do think it's curious. And I've kind of been, and it's not like I'm on board to go out and campaign for running backs getting more money, but it is strange. It is, but look, again, this is kind of shouting at the wind, like Sherman, like you're complaining about the market as if there's somebody out to get you when nobody is spending money on running backs except for the Carolina Panthers, right? And then Todd Gurley earlier on, and that didn't work out for the Rams. So it's a weird situation, though, because running backs are incredibly important. And, you know, you have a good running game, you know what it means here in Seattle, but it's strange that they aren't getting that kind of money. But you're right, Bob. I mean, how many guys can stay healthy? That's been the problem. I mean, look at Gurley. And then, you know, look at these two that he's talked about, himself and Frank Gore. I mean, my gosh, these guys have just been iron men. So, but yeah, it's an unfortunate situation, I guess, for him. But I don't. Is it collusion? I mean, because that, to me, that's what Disrespected says. It doesn't really have anything to do with the market. There's 32 teams that are offering money.
Adrian Peterson making $2.5 million this year. I'm just looking. There's five running backs that are making double-digit millions, and you could make the case.
Do you feel bad for him, Jim?
I don't feel bad for Adrian Peterson. Actually, I don't feel bad for any of these football players when I look at their salaries. But you look at McCaffrey, he's making $16 million. He's at the top of the list. Ezekiel Elliott at $15 million. So both those guys, you go, okay, they were worth it. But then you go Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson at $13 million, not worth it. And then Derrick Henry at $10 million, and that's it for the running backs. And Derrick Henry certainly worth it this last year for Tennessee. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out with the Seahawks, with Chris Carson in his contract year, to see if he can make double-digit millions in 2021.
Well, we'll run some of this by El Hombre. It is Tuesday, so you know it's time for a good conversation with the one, the only El Hombre, Michael Bradley. We'll get into some of this and much, much more coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.